This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hey everyone, the Hockey News Podcast is back. Matt Larkin here with Ryan Kennedy to my right. Yeah. And we are staring at a telephone that has Ken Campbell inside it. He is here in spirit.
He's in the telephone?
Say hello, Kenny boy.
Hello.
Do a better hello than that. That was a crappy HAL 9000 hello.
Hello.
Can you open up a Diet Coke?
Hello.
All right, there we go. That's better. All right, let's get down to business. I mean, if you peruse the interweb, everywhere you look, you'll find, if you just type in like Edmonton Oilers and panic on Google, you'll find about 12,000 articles that were written in the last few days. I think I overheard our senior editor, Brian Costello, in the office earlier today say the Oilers are the lowest scoring team in the NHL. That's a double take stat if there ever was one. What do you guys think is the problem? And do you think it is time for GM Peter Chiarelli to start considering some trades?
Well, it's a couple of things with the Edmonton Oilers. First of all, they don't draw very many penalties, and their power play sucks. So that's part of it there as well. I think they've got the second worst power play in the league. They've also got, like, I'm not sure if they've got the worst shooting percentage in the league, but it's right down there. They're 5.8% shooting percentage. I was looking today, and they've had 22 skaters play at least a game this year, and of those 22, 12 of them have a zero shooting percentage.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, Connor McDavid is at 12.5. That's above the league average, but Drysdale's at 5.9, Lucic at 4.5, you know, Strome's at 5. You pointy head guys, Matt, will tell me that will regress, not progress, but regress to the norm at some time. So I would think that in the natural course of things, if you know, you pointy heads are to be believed, they're going to get better in that respect. But you know, I mean, beyond their top guys, they got a lot of guys that aren't that great offensively. And I guess the question is whether you load up with Draisaitl and McDavid on one line and hope you get enough goals from them and that the other lines chip in, you know, here and there and you do it that way, or if you split the two of them up and try to get, you know, two decent scoring lines. So far, the latter option I don't think has worked very well. So maybe you go with the former. You just go with putting your two stars together, have that dynamic duo. They score all the goals, and then you hope that the other three lines can make something of a contribution.
Mm. On the back end, I think they need an upgrade, and perhaps it just occurs organically because Andreas Sekera comes off the IR and gives them a huge boost. But the other thing I'm thinking of is if you look at their blue line core right now, it's not bad in terms of the guys they have. They don't have a true number one, and Oscar Klefbom has been pretty disappointing so far after having a great year last season. But I'd like to see more offensively inclined guys. And, you know, Sekera will help that. But I wouldn't mind, you know, if they are getting desperate, and I know it's early in his pro career, but Ethan Bear is off to a pretty good start with AHL Bakersfield. He's putting up points. This is a kid that was great offensively with the WHL's Seattle Thunderbirds during his junior career, which culminated in a league championship last year. I think if you gave him sheltered minutes to begin with and maybe put him on the power play where he tends to be very effective, maybe at least in the short term you can get a little bit of a boost. The other option, even though he's not exactly setting the league on fire, is Jesse Puljujärvi, who is down in Bakersfield. Only has 3 assists in 7 games, which is a bit of a red flag, obviously. But who knows, you know, if you continue to lose, that's an option where, you know, you don't lose a draft pick by doing it. You don't lose an asset by making a trade. You're giving the kid another chance. Maybe he can give you some different looks, find some chemistry with somebody, and that gives you a little boost as well, because I don't see a lot of easy solutions for Edmonton, but there's some options there that maybe even incrementally can push them into a better spot.
Good. I got a little idea to table for you guys, okay? So If we're looking at the possession numbers, the Oilers have been absolutely dominant, and Ken, you're right, there should be a regression to the mean there in terms of the shooting percentage, except if you look at the LA Kings the last few years, they had great possession numbers, really bad shooting percentage, and it turned out they just didn't have enough finish. Mm-hmm. If you have poor finish, then the shooting percentage doesn't actually correct itself all that much, mm-hmm. and it's possible the Oilers just don't have enough true scoring ability after McDavid and Draisaitl. So what I'm wondering is, what if you're Peter Chiarelli, you pick up the phone, you call Joe Sakic, and you say, I'll give you Jesse Puljujärvi and a first-round pick for Matt Duchene.
And if I'm Joe Sakic, I say, forget it.
Really?
Not a chance.
Come on, that sounds pretty good to me.
Not a chance.
Yeah.
First of all, if you need fish, you need Puljujärvi.
Heyo.
No way, that's not a trade I would make if I were Joe Sakic, particularly since he's waited out this long. You know, I mean, he's waited a long time to make this trade, and he wants to hit a home run with this trade. This is like a bunt single at best.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Ground rule double. At least give me ground rule double. I thought that was pretty a sexy idea. Maybe the Oilers have to throw in another prospect or something to balance it out, but I'm just thinking, at least from Edmonton's perspective, you know, before you're going to have all the extensions kicking in, Edmonton's cap is going to be scary over the next few years. They want to go for it now, I think, right? So I think if I'm Peter Chiarelli, I'm not afraid to be aggressive right now. But you guys don't like my idea, so...
Be aggressive then, because that's not going to get it done.
Yeah.
Well, I guess maybe you're right about Joe Sakic being stubborn and his asking price being too high.
Yeah.
So I'll give you that, Kenneth.
But also, like, what's Matt Duchene's, you know, top goal-scoring year?
Well, it's still in the 20s, and he's still going to generate offense around him as well.
It just feels like that's... Matt Duchene is definitely one of the best trade chips out there, but I just don't see that particular fit, especially because I think Colorado, if they're making a deal for Duchene, they have to get, like, a top pairing or at least a top three defenseman.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. I'm just picturing Duchene. You know, you could play him on the wing on McDavid's line. Imagine the speed. Or you play him at center, then you can keep Draisaitl on the right side on the first line. But I'll move on. Fine. I'll take my ball and go home. Switching to the Eastern Conference, another team that, I mean, we were planning the parade, as they say, a couple weeks ago, but they've lost, I think it's 4 to the last 5, and they're looking very defensively leaky, and now they're in the middle of a tough Western road trip. Is it time to worry at all about the Toronto Maple Leafs? Are we starting to see a team that was ahead of schedule last year and is going to regress, or do you think this is just a temporary little blip and it's still going to be a great season for them?
Well, I think what's wrong with this team, you know, I mean, everybody's asking what's wrong with the Toronto Maple Leafs. I don't think there's anything wrong with the Toronto Maple Leafs that wasn't wrong with them when the season started. They play a very, very high-risk game. I wish it worked in the NHL. I desperately wish that they could have a ton of success playing this way because it's really fun to watch and it's very entertaining. But unfortunately, you don't. You just don't. And when you stop being able to score your way out of trouble the way the Leafs have in the last little while, then you get exposed. You know, I don't like the top end. Like, Austin Matthews, I think, is a superstar in the making. Personally, if we were voting on the NHL awards right now, he might get my Selke trophy vote too. You know, he's been terrific, but they play a style of game that is really, really risky. And it leads to not so much quantity of chances against, but they give up just 10 bell chances. Like, the chances they give up are astounding sometimes. And, you know, I mean, when you're not getting the goaltending that you need to stay in games like that, you're not going to win. I mean, Frederik Andersen has had a .900 save percentage once in his last 10 games. And so... You know, to me, I think it's just a product of the fact that they play the style that they're playing, and they're just unable. Like, at the beginning of the year, they were scoring 6 and 7 goals a game. They're able to score their way out of trouble, and they haven't been able to do that lately.
I also wonder if one of Mike Babcock's strengths as a coach is currently biting him, which is that, you know, he likes to have the same lineups as much as possible, and... You know, rookies and young kids really have to prove themselves over veterans. But I almost feel like as soon as they signed Roman Polak, that was a detriment You know, he's played four games, and they haven't been very good in any of them. And not only that, but, you know, Tyler Bozak obviously has been struggling this season, and with JVR on the shelf, that's had an effect on Bozak. But you're not seeing you're seeing Bozak, you know, down in the lineup a little bit, but, like, what else can be done? Are there other lineup changes that could help out overall? Dominic Moore isn't looking that great either.
And Matt Martin, same thing. They're relying on Matt Martin when they could be using Josh Levo or Kasperi Kapanen.
Yeah, and Martin did come out the other day. I think
we're going to see that happen. I mean, yeah. Kapanen's been called up. They changed up all the lines yesterday. Except, of course, for Austin Matthews' line because he, for pretty good reason, I guess.
Yeah, it works.
He believes that the two wingers that Austin Matthews has right now is the best fit. So I think we may see a bit of that, you know, like that situation where some of these guys like a Levo and a Kapanen start getting at least a chance. And I mean, Babcock said it yesterday. Now it's up to Levo to make things difficult for him. You know, and I thought he kind of made things difficult the other night when he played, but
yeah.
He has to make them even more difficult for him. That's a lot of pressure on a young guy. Levo has to come in, and he knows he has to be great.
Yeah.
He has to be great. He can't afford to have a couple of bad shifts or a bad game tonight at all. He has to be great, and he has to be great for a couple of games in a row, and then he has to make it really difficult.
Yeah, and I think that sort of lends itself to the problem is, if the veterans are having bad games and they're still in the lineup, even if it's in a diminished role, how is that helping the team overall? Like, Bozak's only playing, you know, 12 minutes, then, like, well, why didn't you just put in Kapanen or Levo for 14 or 15 and get a better effort?
Yeah, it's fair. I'm not overly worried about Frederik Andersen on the goaltending side. He started really slowly last year, and then he was really strong down the stretch. I mean, the slow start is a bit longer this year, but overall I'm not crazy worried about him. I think the problem is the Leafs really do need that top four shutdown type of defender, and it's not going to be easy to acquire one right away. I mean, you could call up George McPhee and get somebody from Vegas, but that's not going to be a big enough upgrade. You're going to have to wait for some teams to drop out of the race. So, you know, for example, I mean, Winnipeg doesn't look so bad so far, but if a Winnipeg, for example, fell out of the race, then you could try and go for a Jacob Trouba. Or if the Ducks' injuries continue to sink them and they're not a playoff team in a couple months, you can go after, you know, a Sami Vatanen or something like that. But right now, the top-end defensemen, I just don't think are on the market yet, so the Leafs may have to just sort of ride this out and try juggling that lineup. Switching over to the New York Islanders, it's interesting. I'm very curious, Kenny Boyd, to hear your thoughts on this, because I know you're a guy who's been pretty convinced John Tavares is leaving Brooklyn. But he's got 11 goals in 12 games so far, lighting the league on fire. And I'm curious what that means, because he's carrying the Islanders and making them pretty competitive so far. And if this turns out to be a successful year for him and for the team, does that increase his chances of staying? Or what do you think is going to happen in the summer?
I suppose it does, but I think in the grand scheme of things, this isn't going to move the needle one way or the other. He's either going to sign there or he's not going to sign there. Based on what he sees this team, where this team is going, where it's going to be, whether they're going to get a new rink, you know, all those other things. And I mean, he's going to get his money, right? So if he scores 50 goals this year, he's going to get big money from the Islanders, or he's going to get big money from somebody else. So I don't think this is about money. I don't think it's about, you know, him making himself more attractive as a free agent, because, you know, if he goes to unrestricted free agency, he's going to be, you know, the best free agent in probably history. You know, the best unrestricted free agent in history. I've been one to say that I don't think he's going to be on Long Island next year or in Brooklyn or playing for the Islanders. I've also never said that he's going to be playing for the Leafs. So all you people who keep saying I think he's going to be playing for the Leafs next year, I don't think he will be. I don't think he's going to be in either place. I think he's going to be gone. And I think if it had been, you know, if there was a deal to be done and it was going to get done, it would have been done by now.
I think he stays. It's just the vibe I get, and I think it's great that he's having this great start, and if he can get that team into the playoffs, I think it strengthens his resolve even more, because, I mean, we've seen this in the past from Tavares that, you know, he didn't take max money on his contract. He clearly has a plan in his head of, you know, what he wants his role to be with this franchise. It's very hands-on. It's very community-oriented. You know, he wants to have success, but he wants to have it with the Islanders. And, you know, obviously for his sake and for Islanders fans, you hope that it is in either Brooklyn or Queens or Staten Island or wherever it is. I think he's going to give them every opportunity to make it work with whatever arena they're in. And it's a crappy situation, and clearly John Tavares has a ton of patience, but that's just the vibe that I get.
Yeah, I think I lean the same way as you, Ryan. And you think back the last couple of years, you know, Anze Kopitar wasn't signed as of Christmas, right before the summer where his contract was up. And Steven Stamkos made it all the way to, what, June 30th or June 29th. And he still ended up signing. And I think sometimes we forget that a lot of these players, they still have built lives in these cities. And if it can work out, I think they still, by default, would prefer to sign where they're comfortable. And I agree, Tavares. And to me, Tavares, he strikes me as a guy who, yes, he's big in the community, but he also isn't a lover of the limelight. And I think he does have a certain degree of anonymity playing in just such a huge sports market that has, you know, NBA and MLB and NFL. So he doesn't have to be the guy when he walks down the street and get mobbed. And I think he's the type of athlete that enjoys that. So I think maybe even if it's 51-49, I think Tavares is going to stay, especially when you're seeing some youth around him. I mean, Matthew Barzal looks pretty good so far. I think he's got 7 points in his past 7 games. Mm-hmm. And if someone like that can emerge, suddenly Tavares can have more confidence in the team around him. And I think the odds of him staying would go up in that case. We're going to switch gears to an interview, a really fun one. I don't know if you guys have been following on Twitter, readers, but our most recent issue, which should be hitting newsstands any day now, our guest editor is Jonathan Taves, and he took over the issue. He was our boss. He picked the stories. He participated in it a lot. We did a big photo shoot with him. And being Jonathan Taves, as I said to him, it was kind of the most Jonathan Taves thing ever, that he really did put in the work. It wasn't just a gimmick. He really did try and make this special. And as we were building this issue, I went to Chicago, and I caught up with him, and we did a little interview, had a fun conversation, and I want you guys to hear some of it. So sit back and listen. This is Jonathan Taves. You know, we've noticed in recent years, and maybe other people have noticed it too, but, you know, you've joined Twitter, and if you look at, your Instagram and stuff, like, you show a lot of humor and travel a lot, all that kind of stuff, and to me it kind of goes against the stereotype of Captain Serious. So I guess, first of all, I'm just curious, do you like the nickname? Do you think it's accurate, or do you think that it doesn't really represent who you are right now?
Oh, it's definitely accurate. Yeah. I'm not necessarily trying to get rid of it. I guess a lot of people ask me about that, and I just kind of, my response now is I've just kind of embraced it, but I've also embraced the other parts of myself that I've been able to show a little bit and at least show some of my interests. I think, you know, as anyone who's asked me about my social media, I think the biggest thing for me, the biggest reason I've joined really, is to just try and include myself in some conversations as far as what I'm interested in off the ice and what I'm interested in giving back to.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of players have their foundations and different things that they want to contribute to and use their platform or their name or their status to able to contribute to something. So for me, it's to try and be part of that world and show why I care about it and why it's made a difference for me.
Cool. And do you think the environmental stuff, would that be paramount for you? Is that sort of number one on the list, and just climate change? Because I know I've read some heartfelt things that you wrote, and I was impressed by it.
Not necessarily. It's not necessarily the first thing. I think for me, it's always, and again, you know, I'm getting more and more comfortable picking my spots. At the end of the day, I don't want to be one of those people who's posting every day and just kind of filling the airwaves with whatever. But I definitely like to think and or at least come up with something that's well thought out. Something that I know rings true with something I believe in, and so for the most part, my interests are more towards health and performance, longevity, or even just helping people kind of find their best selves. And for me, the focal point there has kind of been through nutrition and healthy eating, and obviously environment kind of tags along with that in some ways. So that's my number one thing that I'd like to focus on with kids, as far as my off-ice contributions down the road.
Cool. And I've noticed, like, I read a lot about the nutrition stuff. And as a captain, especially, and I was asking John Hayden about it, and I was asking Saad about it as well today, but do you kind of like to, like, preach is too strong a word, but do you kind of like to teach and just share your knowledge with your own teammates in terms of just how to eat right and whatever you've been learning about the nutrition stuff?
Well, I guess sometimes when you learn something new that makes a difference for you, I think your initial reaction is maybe to want to share that,
yeah,
or at least kind of connect with others and see if they've had that same experience. Sometimes you find out that's not always the case, and some people aren't interested in the same things, and that's okay too. So there's no doubt I definitely don't mind having the conversations with people that are interested in or mm-hmm. kind of more accepting to that sort of stuff. At the end of the day, you can't really force what you think you know on anyone else if they don't really care about it either. So,
did you have sort of a eureka moment, like at some point in your career, where you decided to focus more on the nutrition stuff, or was it sort of it's always been part of you, and now you're just deciding to share it?
Yeah. Well, anyone who asked that question as well, it's for me that there was a turning point. My second season in the NHL, we just lost out to Detroit mm-hmm. in the conference finals, and I'd gotten super sick throughout the second and third round. I just kind of had constant ups and downs, getting sick, like throwing up before games, not being able to sleep at night.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that. Yeah, yeah.
Just out of control, feeling off all the time, and always thinking I just need to work harder, need to push through it, not really knowing that not every guy is going through the same thing and that there's something wrong.
Right.
So that's when I started. I called Mike Gapsky, our trainer, in the summer, and got me on board with a nutritionist, started doing all sorts of testing, you know, playing around, taking things in and out of my diet. And that's when I started feeling the difference right away, and that's when it kind of woke me up to the fact that you know, what you eat makes a huge difference in how you feel every day, not only just on the ice, but kind of with the rest of your life. So it's been a learning process ever since. I mean, that's almost seven or eight years. So, but yeah, there's no doubt it made a huge difference for me.
Have you, any of the foods you discovered, is there anything that's kind of out there that people would say, whoa, that's not something I ever would have associated with health, or just something that's kind of like more extreme than the average person who's into nutrition? Or
I guess I am pretty extreme. I definitely get a hard time from my teammates.
Yeah.
So at this point, it's funny because, you know, if you're constantly trying to get on the cutting edge of performance and health and all that stuff, there's a lot of weird stuff you could be throwing onto your routine every single day. But at the end of the day, I think I just try and keep it as simple as possible. Because there's a lot of people out there trying to sell you stuff too, right?
Yeah.
So I don't think there's a magic bullet. I think you got to find what works for you and stick with that. But there's no doubt with our nutritionists here in Chicago and you know, the different tests we've been able to do in Chicago with our team, just kind of like learning you know, the different things you have to improve on and what, again, like I said, what works for you.
Yeah. When I remember, you know, when you wrote that message, that longer message about climate change, and I remember I was impressed because I thought, you know, in today's day and age, I think it's especially common in hockey, even compared to like the NFL, where I find players don't speak out on an issue very often. Do you think that's true? And do you think it's like, did you feel almost, I don't know, nervous to go out on a limb because it's not that common in the game today? Or I don't know, how do you feel about that?
Well, I just honestly, I wanted to be different in the way that I didn't want to take a position. I don't know if like most people think I was extreme in one sense, but I don't think I was at all. I thought I was pretty on the fence, and I think you see it. I mean, I'll disagree with you. I think you see it more and more. Athletes that at the end of the day, deep down, don't really know what they're talking about, but want to, you know, cause waves or bring attention to themselves by making off, you know, off the field comments about, it could be political,
like,
or
uneducated,
could be
kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think you can see that they don't know what they're talking about, and I think a lot of people out there who think they do, they don't. For myself, I'm not pretending to be super educated on a lot of these topics, but I think the point I was trying to make, and the obvious topic was climate change, and at that time, I think Donald Trump had withdrawn from the Paris Accord. I'll be the first to admit I haven't, you know, read the Paris Accord through and through.
Me neither.
I think everyone has their own views. I think a lot of that is based on their own personality most of the time, or maybe something, some sort of attitude that was handed down to them in some sense that they don't realize. So all I was trying to say was, if you think you know something, try and hear out the other person who has, you know, an opposite opinion of yours, and I think that's the only way you make progress. And so people automatically think that I'm, you know, attacking Trump or making...
Right, yeah, that's the shortcut people
that's
take.
That's exactly. Yeah, yeah. So then you see that in the comments, and it's like, okay, it's not at all what I was saying. People didn't even listen or didn't really read the comments. So it was just funny. People want to, you know, get extreme one way or another, and they want to get in arguments, and it's just like, well, we're not going to get anywhere if we keep going down that road.
Well, I'm glad I asked you that, too. It's good to know that, because it's funny. That's where my brain goes, too. Like, I think, oh, climate change. Like, Dave, he spoke out about it, but it's not that simple, right? I was just reading a bit about just you growing up, and I know, from what I can tell, you're a big fisherman guy. Mm-hmm. Was that something, like, did that go all the way back to childhood, and did you do it with your family, or how did you get involved in fishing?
Yeah, well, I loved it since I was a kid. My dad always took my brother and I on fishing trips. You know, not far from Winnipeg, there's tons of lakes out in Ontario and eastern Manitoba. So I was lucky to get that experience as a young kid, and now I live on the lake in the summer at Lake of the Woods. So definitely lucky to be able to do that. I'd have to say my brother is the bigger fisherman in the family, my brother and my dad, because he's been working since he's been done playing hockey. It's been his summer jobs to get himself through school and stuff. So he's on the lake every day, and so is my dad. So I just kind of tag along with them most of the time.
And your dad, he was an electrician, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did he pass on those skills? Like, did you learn anything growing up, or were you just focused on hockey from
your dad? I'm surprised. How did you know that?
I dig around, find what you can. Better to know going in, then I can ask you different stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, that's awesome. I guess at this point in my hockey career, every time there was a chance to step up on a ladder or grab a hammer or do anything with my hands, he was the first to get in the way and make sure I wasn't doing that, or even chopping wood for a fire in the summer. He doesn't want anything going sideways.
Makes sense.
He's probably right in that sense. So I guess he wants me to wait till after my hockey career till he teaches me all the handyman tricks that he grew up on the farm, and he's kind of learned that since he was a kid, so hasn't been passed down yet.
Cool, makes sense. Maybe just a couple more for you. I don't want to take up too much time here. I know your mom is she French Canadian?
Mm-hmm.
So do you still have a lot of French in you? Like, are you bilingual?
Yeah.
And so do you speak it with her, or?
I speak French with my mom and English with my dad.
So you feel pretty good about your skills?
There's some days where it's a little bit tougher because I rarely get to speak it, but then I'll go visit my family for a few days in Quebec and just get to brush up on it, then it's easier after a while. But you're not using it every day, sometimes it gets a little tricky, but it's something since I was a kid that I've been pretty lucky to have, and pretty proud to be able to speak two languages fluently. So it's kind of a cool thing I've been able to hang on to.
For sure. And I'm trying to think, like, Antoine Vermette a couple years ago, like, there haven't been a ton of francophone Blackhawks over the years, right? So I assume, I don't know whether you tried it with him when he was in town.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, every chance I get. I have to, so.
Yeah, good, man, good. This is another thing. I read this, and I couldn't find it anywhere else. I was like, did I misread this? But did you do Taekwondo when you were young?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So does that, like, did you keep it up? Like, could you? So it's not something like, you know, if you were stuck in an alley with, like, a mugger, you couldn't use the skills.
No.
Right.
So unfortunately not.
Did you do it, like, competitively?
No, I just took classes probably when I was, like, 10 or 11. So I didn't go too long. It was a couple years when I was a kid. But it was fun to learn. I think if I had the chance, you know, if I have kids someday, for sure I'd put them in some kind of martial arts, for sure.
Like, for flexibility, discipline, all
everything,
that kind of
stuff. Yeah, all around, just being a good athlete. So, cool. Learn a lot.
All right, thanks to our boss, Mr. Taves. That was fun. And watch for the magazine on newsstands in the coming days with Johnny T on the cover, or Taser, as his teammates call him.
Taser.
We're going to finish off with some reader questions now. The first one is from Claus Dorr. It's a pretty interesting question. He says, which would be the NHL's top five teams if the league would decide to play on larger rinks, European size?
Well, the probably the speediest teams that are out there. I mean, you know, you look at Edmonton. I mean, with Connor McDavid on you know, playing there and you know, having the speed that he has, you know, being able to separate himself from defenders and you know, being able to make a mockery, I guess, of some of those guys. You know, that's the thing, right? Small ice is better for slower players. So, you know, there are guys that might be able to catch guys on big ice, on small ice, that they can't do it on big ice. So I would think the Edmonton Oilers would be a team. I don't know. I mean, just pick out any fast teams, I guess. The faster the team, probably the better the chance they'd have on the big ice.
See, I took the opposite tack from that, because with the big ice, you can angle guys off so much more easily. There's almost too much space, which is why with European leagues, you don't usually see a lot of scoring. So I was thinking the one team that they are a fast team, is the Pittsburgh Penguins, because they play the same style as Team Canada does internationally. And Team Canada, I mean, obviously it helps that they have all that skill, but they've figured out the way of playing on big ice and being successful. But in terms of other teams, I wonder if squads like Montreal and Ottawa and the Rangers would actually have more success on international ice, not only because with Ottawa, obviously they're so structured that they would be able to figure out how to lock teams down on the bigger ice even better than they do now, whereas with Montreal, you know, you have Carey Price in net. He's no longer facing shots from all over, because when you play internationally, you really kind of have to pick your spots. So he'd have better sight lines. Shea Weber's slap shots is still going to be as devastating as it is on small ice. And then with the Rangers, like, Henrik Lundqvist is still very good internationally. And maybe that helps sort out, you know, they got a lot of veterans in New York. Rick Nash, I know he's, you know, older now, but he always had great success on the big ice with Team Canada. So I kind of feel like teams that, other than Pittsburgh, teams that don't actually have much speed would still be okay as long as they had a lot of good defensive structure. It would be super boring. Let's point that out. It would be super boring. But that's my two cents.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know what? I as you could tell by my first response, I'm not really feeling this question, guys.
Oh, you're dissing Claus Dort. Sorry, Claus. Sorry, Claus.
I just think that who's ever good now in the NHL would be good on a big rink. They'd figure it out. Good teams are good teams. It doesn't matter how what size you make the rink. I think the teams that are really good would be really good on a big rink, and teams that are really bad would be really bad on a big rink.
I think that's true, Ken, but I don't think it's a product of our poor Claus's question. I think it's more 10, 15 years ago, the answers would be very different. But now, even on the small ice, it's a speed game. So now there's more of a correlation there. So I agree. I was going to say Tampa Bay as well, because you'd have Kucherov, Stamkos, Braden Point, Tyler Johnson, Victor Hedman controlling the play with his big stride. So I agree that the teams that are good now would be good on big ice, but it's more a product of the way the game has changed. We'll finish it off with one more. This is from Jordan Sampson, and he just says, any coaching changes soon? It's a good doozy of a question. It's better than Klaus Dohr's question, I guess, right, Ken?
I mean, it's a result-oriented business, and if you don't get the results, then there's going to be a coaching change. I don't see any coaching change in Montreal. I would think that, you know, I mean, Alain Vigneault getting that win last night, a big come-from-behind win where they scored three goals in the third period to beat Las Vegas. Like, who among us would have thought that, you know, in October, a win over Las Vegas would be so huge. But I mean, I would think Alain Vigneault is probably you know, the guy right now that people are thinking would be the closest to being fired. I mean, you know, the problem is in Arizona. I mean, what do you do? Do you fire Rick Tocchet after 11 games? After 12 games? Probably not. You know, and you know, I mean, we all know that in Arizona, it's largely been because of just absolutely putrid goaltending, you know, that they are where they are. So I don't see teams being as panic-stricken as they have been in the past in these sorts of things. A lot of times, they're more willing to ride things out. And I think teams now realize more than ever that you're going to have low ebbs of the season no matter how good you are. And sometimes, you know, and maybe it is with Montreal. Maybe that low ebb came at the beginning of the season and maybe they're starting to turn it around. I don't know. I think teams are a lot more patient than they used to be with coaches. But, you know, that being said, I mean, they're not, you know, it's not an unconditional well of patience. So, you know, I would expect that I don't think there's anything on the front burner. I don't think we're going to see any coaching changes within the next week or so. But ultimately, you know, you would think a team like, say, the Rangers, if they don't get out of this funk in terms of the long term, that, you know, that would be a place.
Yeah, I would say Vigneault would be the prime candidate. And I think about this. If Vegas isn't down to their fourth-string goaltender, the Rangers probably lose that game. And I'm not sure how much stock Glenn Sather would necessarily put into that or Jeff Gordon, but you really have to consider, like, Alain Vigneault needs to send Maxim Lagacy some flowers or chocolates today because he might have saved his job.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that the leash is going to be pretty short there in New York, and particularly because this is not a team that can afford to not contend this year. Like, the window is quickly closing in New York. Like, guys are aging out, and they don't have the pipeline to replenish it. So I would think, like, you know, if New York drops a couple more games, you know, obviously they beat Vegas, but if they lose a couple of games from here on out, I wonder if they wouldn't pull the trigger to try to salvage the season and get Lundqvist one more shot at a Stanley Cup.
Yeah, I think you guys have nailed it. I was going to say Vigneault as well because of the fact, specifically, it's that window. And even though his success with the team has been very consistent, they've got to win right now because it's now or bust for that team. I think you can keep an eye on guys like Jeff Blashill maybe in Detroit if they decide just for their rebuild they want to go in a different direction, if they don't see enough progress. And then a guy like Phil Housley or Rick Tocchet, I don't think coaching changes are considered there until the end of the season if they decide just year one of those tenures was just too disastrous. With the Rangers, though, I think there's motivation there, and I know we did a study in our magazine a couple years ago to see if there really was correlation between mid-season hires and boosts in the standings, and there was. So it's an emotional lift, and it is temporary, but teams do traditionally get that boost when a new guy comes in. So if you're a Rangers, you're trying to give the team sort of the defibrillator to try and give it a boost. It could actually work mid-season. So that concludes the questions.
I got a question.
Oh, wait. Okay, Kenny boy. Ken at the buzzer.
Before we close up, what if the Edmonton Oilers continue to flounder?
Yeah.
What if they continue to flounder? What if they continue to be as bad as they've been? Like, they're in what? 30th overall right now?
I believe 30th, yeah, I think that's right.
I mean, they've played fewer games than a lot of teams, so that, I think that sort of is part of the reason why I think they've only played 9 or 10 games. But what if, you know, what if they don't figure it out for another 15 games?
Yeah.
What if for another 15 games they go like, you know, 3-10-2?
Mm.
What happens then? What happens in Edmonton?
Do you bring in Dan Bylsma?
Can you make a coaching change?
That's fair, Kenny boy. I'll tell you what. I'll accept that idea if you accept my Matt Duchene trade. And we'll call it even, bro.
I'm just posing a question. Your Matt Duchene trade is insanely ridiculous. It's a question.
All right, Kenny boy. Thanks for listening, everybody. And we'll check back again next week to see if all 31 coaches have their jobs.